The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nothing perfect or considerable, we're so damn good. It's the story of your life, you're moving down the page, and you know you're on your way. The story of your life, you live it every day. You run, but you won't get away.
Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the ReliefFactor.com studio. I must tell you, I wish today you were watching on YouTube. I have show and tell today. You can watch on Facebook as well, but it's really YouTube that you should be on, because I have in my hand, I have here, I've got to fix my collar if you're actually going to call in, watch YouTube. I have in my hand a list of stories from around the world. I went looking around the world this morning in show prep for headlines about the vote that occurred in the Senate yesterday, that whether or not to proceed to the impeachment trial of Donald Trump, which was 55 to 45 to proceed. All right, 55 to 45 to proceed. Now, there were 30,000 people on the mall when Donald Trump gave his ill-advised and reckless speech. But there were 30,000 people. 800 people participated in an insurrection for which they will be prosecuted. Some face sedition charges for which the trial, the sentence could be 20 years in jail. So it's a serious doggone thing. Nevertheless, yesterday was a question of constitutionality. Does the United States Senate have jurisdiction over a former president for the purposes of impeachment, removal from office, and barring from future office? The answer is clearly no. Face of the document. Don't tell me about William Hastings. I saw some idiot talking about William Hastings last night. The United States Constitution was adopted in 1789. And from that time forward, the only precedents that matter are the precedents that go directly to that phrase, that clause, and to presidents. Don't talk to me about the Secretary of War either. It's about presidents singled out specifically. Presidents, not former presidents. So, headlines from the Financial Times. Nearly all Republicans back Trump in an early impeachment test. From the United Kingdom's The Telegraph. Democrats' hopes of convincing Trump fade, of convicting Trump fade, as only five Republican senators back holding a Senate trial. From the Times of Israel. Republican senators mostly vote against holding Trump impeachment trial. From the Wall Street Journal, most Republican senators reject constitutionality of Trump impeachment. From the Washington Post, nearly all GOP senators vote against impeachment trial for Trump, signaling likely acquittal. From the New York Times, Republicans rally against impeachment trial, signaling likely acquittal for Trump, etc., etc., etc. Everybody, and I mean everybody, knows this is a giant waste of time. Most people should know that the trial is at best, arguably constitutional, and that it is very likely unconstitutional. That's the better argument. That's my argument, Judge Littig's argument, Alan Dershowitz's argument, Tom Cotton's argument. And it is certainly eating up time in a pandemic and Joe Biden's 100 days when we need COVID relief phase 5, targeted COVID relief. It is a sham show trial to satisfy the left. And President Biden should call on it to end before it begins if he wants unity. But Joe doesn't want unity. President Biden took to the White House yesterday, and this is astonishing. Not what he said, but what Susan Rice said after him. Here's what he said as a warm-up. Cut number one.
To put out best practices for combating xenophobia in our national response to COVID. Look, in the weeks ahead, I'll be reaffirming the federal government's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion and accessibility, building on the work we started in the Obama-Biden administration. That's why I'm rescinding the previous administration's harmful ban on diversity and sensitivity training and abolish the offensive counterfactual 1776 commission. Unity and healing must begin with understanding and truth, not ignorance and lies. Today, I'm also issuing an executive order that will ultimately end the Justice Department's use of private prisons, an industry that houses pretrial detainees and federal prisoners.
Now I want to play for you Ambassador Rice. Now, Susan Rice was last seen as the National Security Advisor. She has been brought back as the czar of domestic policy, just like John Kerry is the climate czar. So Susan Rice, who is very competent, very smart, she knows exactly what she's doing. She lays out her plan in detail yesterday. I want you to listen to this closely. My number, by the way, is 1-800-520-1234. I want to hear from you what you think she is saying here. 1-800-520-1234. Here's Ambassador Susan Rice, cut number 19.
We've hit the ground running to embed equity throughout the administration. On day one, the president signed an executive order directing an unprecedented whole-of-government initiative to embed racial equity across federal policies, programs, and institutions. That starts with a review of policies and institutions to redress systemic racism where it exists and to advance equity where we aren't doing enough. Every agency will place equity at the core of their public engagement, their policy design and program delivery, to ensure that government resources are reaching Americans of color and all marginalized communities, rural, urban, disabled, LGBTQ+, religious minorities, and so many others. The president has put equity at the center of his response to the COVID-19 and economic crises. His executive orders signed last week deliver rent relief, student debt reprieve, and emergency food assistance to families across the country, helping all Americans, including black and brown families who we know are being hit hardest by this crisis.
So let me repeat that for you because you might not have caught it at first. When I heard that yesterday, my con law antennae started to Twitter. Look, I have taught constitutional law for 25 years. I'm on leave until next year. And I did that because of the election and the election aftermath, and it's just a big news year. So I took a year off, and I will start teaching in January of next year. And at that time, I imagine I will have many lawsuits against the Biden administration for the unconstitutional use of race, ethnicity, religion, and gender in their government actions. And I hope that the Alliance Defending Freedom and other groups designed to maintain the United States as a colorblind society, which it was designed to be. The initial defect of the country was slavery. Slavery's abolition led to Jim Crow. Jim Crow took a century to get rid of. We have finally achieved the mandate of colorblindness. And Susan Rice says this about every agency in the government. Cut number 19.
We've hit the ground running to embed equity throughout the administration. On day one, the president signed an executive order directing an unprecedented whole-of-government initiative to embed racial equity across federal policies, programs, and institutions. That starts with a review of policies and institutions to redress systemic racism where it exists and to advance equity where we aren't doing enough. Every agency will place equity at the core of their public engagement, their policy design and program delivery, to ensure that government resources are reaching Americans of color and all marginalized communities, rural, urban, disabled, LGBTQ+, religious minorities, and so many others. The president has put equity at the center of his response to the COVID-19 and economic crises. His executive orders signed last week deliver rent relief, student debt reprieve, and emergency food assistance to families across the country, helping all Americans, including black and brown families who we know are being hit hardest by this crisis.
I believe that the people being hit hardest by this crisis are those who have lost a family member to COVID, regardless of their ethnicity, race, religious background. But what I think about this is that it's all unconstitutional. Every word she said is unconstitutional. And I hope that they post a website that tracks everything they do pursuant to this policy, because it is all unconstitutional. 1-800-520-1234. Call me with what you think. 1-800-520-1234. Connection to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384.
800-500-8384. I see the bad moon rising. I see trouble on the way. I see earthquakes and lightning. I see bad times today.
Don't go. Welcome back, America, to you. And I listen with constitutional ears. Seriously, you cannot teach for 25 years and not hear everything through the prism of what the Constitution says as it has been interpreted by the Supreme Court and is amended by the Congress and the states since its founding in 1789. And if there's one thing it does, it bars the government using race, ethnicity, and religion in any program. So when I heard Susan Rice yesterday, I said, what in the world is she talking about? What did you hear? What did you hear? Cheryl in Chicago, what did you hear?
What I heard was that this is federal overreach. This is federal overreach, and I think this is going to be divisive to us as a country, and I expect many lawsuits as a result.
That you're right. There are going to be lawsuits raining down from the sky. And this morning I asked Alliance Defending Freedom through our contact at Salem Network to have them put together a page. I want, because they're going to come after religions big time.
Absolutely.
And Susan Rice is smart. This is not, you know, playing against Sad Sack. This is not like playing the Pirates. By the way, they're no longer the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're the Pittsburgh Prospects. And this is playing against the A team, and they intend to, they completely intend to abandon constitutional principle. So, Cheryl, you heard it right. Thank you, Cheryl. Lucy in Cleveland, Ohio. What did you hear, Lucy?
What I heard is unity is going to be what they say, and there's going to be no discussion about it at all. And that's it. If we want unity and coming together, it's going to be what they want.
Agree.
Agree.
Lucy, well said. Ray, Blue Ridge, Georgia. What did you hear, Ray?
Sir, I think they're going to tell us they're going to throw a ton of money at a problem that doesn't exist.
Which problem would that be?
Well, they're telling everybody that we're all racist and we have to all, you know, have this unity and everything. But what they're, people get along at the end of the day. They don't care what color you are or, you know, who you sleep with. Like, people aren't as racist as the media is making us out to be.
There are a hardcore of racists in the United States. I talked to Secretary Hillary Clinton about this once, and we agreed probably about 600,000 or less who are stone-cold white supremacists. On the other end of the, 600,000 out of 330 million people. And we have to watch them and keep an eye on them, et cetera. But the government cannot get into the business of categorizing and spending money based upon race. They can't do it.
I'm saying they're going to throw a ton of money at it anyway, Hugh.
They're going to try, but it is unconstitutional, and people will be thanking Donald Trump for 40 years for this Supreme Court. Thank you, Ray. David in Florida, what are they saying?
It's racism for one. It's dictatorial, picking winners and losers, and violating the Constitution based on race, creed, color, the creation of entitled classes. It divides our society. It does not unify our society.
What do you think equity means?
It means uniformity.
Yes. Yes, you won. It means uniformity. That's what equity means. Unless and until everybody has the same of everything, there will be equity issues. It's an absolute nightmare standard for the country, and it went unnoticed and unremarked upon yesterday by the major media. Thank you, my friend. Let me go to James in Louisville. Hey, James.
Hello, Hugh.
Hey, James, well, can I thank you for Mitch McConnell? You're a Kentucky person. I just want to thank you for Mitch McConnell.
Well, I thank him every day. I mean, what he said on the floor and the way that he was going to stop everything by blowing up the nuclear option by saying, we're just not going to show up, and therefore you don't have...
I'm going to play it in the next segment. God bless Mitch McConnell. Keep him safe.
Good.
And thank you, Kentucky.
Well, on the last gentleman, it's not only just uniformity, it's conformity, because equality is not equity. Equality is what we should strive to achieve. Equity, on the other hand, is just like the outcome-based education. They want everybody to be equal at the finish line, whereas equality is everybody.
Yeah. We cannot, no matter how many years we try, we cannot turn Dwayne into a softball pitcher. We could never do that. Doesn't matter. The equity of it is I'm good at it, he's not. In 100 years, it would never change. Stay tuned.
How can you be as nice as me? You're not from the same slice as me. Where do we go from here, my friend? Is this the way our story ends? Hey, missing me.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh here at 33 minutes after the hour. Mitch McConnell, majority leader, now minority leader of the United States Senate, took to the Senate floor in a 50-50 Senate yesterday to give remarks that you need to hear. Cut number 13.
The Republican leader is recognized.
Mr. President, yesterday two Democratic senators confirmed they will not provide the votes to eliminate the legislative filibuster. Senior Senator from West Virginia issued a public, quote, guarantee, end quote, I do not support doing away with the filibuster under any condition, end quote. Any chance of changing his mind? Quote, none whatsoever. The senior senator from Arizona made the same commitment. She opposes ending the legislative filibuster and, quote, is not open to changing her mind, end quote. Our colleague informed me directly last night that under no circumstances would she reverse course. Now, it should not be news that a few members of the majority pledge they won't tear up a central rule. But the Democratic leader was reluctant to repeat the step I took as majority leader in unified government when I ruled out that step on principle. Rather than relying on the Democratic leader, I took the discussion directly to his members. Basic arithmetic now ensures that there are not enough votes to break the rule. This victory will let us move forward with a 50-50 power-sharing agreement containing all the elements of the 2001 model, because it will sit on the very same foundation. I want to discuss the precipice from which the Senate has stepped back. In 2013, Senator Reid, Harry Reid, began the nuclear exchange over nominations. I said Democrats would regret it. A few years later, we have many federal judges, including three Supreme Court justices, who were confirmed with fewer than 60 votes. The back-and-forth exchange over nominations had one institutional silver lining. Because routinely filibustering nominations was itself a modern invention pioneered by Senate Democrats in the 2000s. So on nominations, for all the fighting, the Senate just simply circled back to the simple majority threshold that had been our longstanding norm on nominations, that is, on the executive calendar. Legislation is very different. When it comes to lawmaking, the framers' vision and our history are abundantly clear. The Senate exists to require deliberation and cooperation. James Madison said the Senate's job was to provide a complicated check, he said, against improper acts of legislation. We ensure that laws earn enough buy-in to receive the lasting consent of the governed. We stop bad ideas, improve good ideas, and keep laws from swinging wildly with every election. Our friend Lamar Alexander put it this way in his farewell speech. He said, the Senate exists to produce broad agreements on controversial issues that become laws most of us have voted for and that a diverse country will accept. More than any other feature, it is the Senate's 60-vote threshold to end debate on legislation that achieves this. It ensures narrow interests cannot ignore the rest of the country. It embodies Jefferson's maxim that great innovation should not be forced on slender majorities. The bar for lawmaking is high. It should be high, even if both bodies take turns being slightly frustrated by it. If your legislation can't pass the Senate, you don't scrap the rules or lower the standards. You improve your idea, take your case to the people, or both. 4 years ago, Republicans had just won unified control. President Trump and others pressured us heavily, me in particular, to scrap this rule when it was protecting the Democratic minority. But we stood firm. I stood firm, endured many tweets on the subject. I said we would not do that to our colleagues in the minority. No short-term policy win justifies destroying the Senate as we know it, especially since laws would become so brittle and reversible. So Democratic senators used the 60-vote threshold to shape and block legislation. They stalled COVID relief. They blocked police reform. They stopped even modest measures to protect innocent life. Because I chose not to destroy the tool that allowed them to do that. That same tool that some Democrats now want to destroy, they used freely and liberally throughout their years in the minority, and I protected their ability to do that. Republicans understand you don't destroy the Senate for fleeting advantage. Our friends across the aisle must see the same. I've talked a lot about principle. We should also make this a little more tangible. So let's take a look at what would happen if, in fact, the legislative filibuster was gone. If the Democratic majority were to attack the filibuster, they would guarantee themselves immediate chaos, especially in this 50-50 Senate. This body operates every day, every hour, by consent. And destroying the filibuster would drain comity and consent from this body to a degree that would be unparalleled in living memory. So let's look at some examples. The Constitution requires the Senate to have a quorum to do any business. Right now, a quorum is 51. And the vice president does not count to establish a quorum. The majority cannot even produce a quorum on their own, and one could be demanded by any senator at almost any time. Our committees need quorums to function as well, and will also be evenly split. If this majority went scorched earth, this body would grind to a halt like we've never seen. Technically, it takes collegiality and consent for the majority to keep acting as the majority at any time they do not physically have a majority. In a scorched earth, post-nuclear Senate, that's 50-50 like we have today, every Senate Democrat and the vice president could essentially just block out the next 2 years on their calendar. They'd have to be here all the time. It takes unanimous consent to schedule most votes, to schedule speeches, to convene before noon, to schedule many hearings and markups. As Democrats just spent 4 years reminding us, it takes consent to confirm even the lowest level nominees at anything beyond a snail's pace. None of us have ever seen a Senate where every single thing either happens in the hardest possible way or not at all. Heck, Mr. President, once or twice every day, the majority leader reads through an entire paragraph of routine requests. Objections could turn each one into multiple lengthy roll call votes. None of us on either side want to live in a scorched earth Senate. The institution and the American people deserve a lot better. But there's no doubt, none. That's what we'd see if Democrats tear up this pivotal rule. It would become immediately and painfully clear to the Democratic majority that they had indeed just broken the Senate. This gambit would not speed the Democrats' ambitions. It would delay them terribly. And it would hamstring the Biden presidency over a power grab, which the president has spent decades warning against and still opposes. Finally, at some point, the shoe would find its way to the other foot. When Republicans next control the government, we'd be able to repeal every bill that had just been rammed through. And we'd set about defending the unborn, exploring domestic energy, unleashing free enterprise, defunding sanctuary cities, securing the border, protecting workers' paychecks from union bosses. You get the picture. But a few years later, Democrats would try to flip it all back. So instead of building stable consensus, we'd be chaotically swapping party platforms, swinging wildly between opposite visions that would guarantee half the country is miserable and resentful at any given time. We would have inherited resilient institutions but left behind a chaotic mess. We're in a politically charged period. But when factional fever runs hot, when slender majorities are most tempted to ram through radicalism, these are the times for which the guardrails exist in the first place. Republicans said no, emphatically no, to pushing the Senate over this precipice. When I could have tried to grab the power, I turned it down. Said President Trump, no, repeatedly, because the nation needs us to respect the framers' design and the Senate's structure. Because, as I said in a different context on January the 6th, we have a higher calling than endless partisan escalation. We placed our trust in the institution itself, in a common desire to do the right thing. I'm grateful that's been reciprocated by at least a pair of our colleagues across the aisle. I'm glad we've stepped back from this cliff. Taking that plunge would not be some progressive dream. It would be a nightmare. I guarantee it.
That was Mitch McConnell, and the country owes him a debt of thanks. It is for stability that he spoke, and the left hates that, and the right should applaud him. He is the greatest legislative leader the Republicans have had in my lifetime, and there is no second place. And I know Bob Dole was good. I know that. There is no second place. It's Leader McConnell. Welcome back, America 2 Hewitt. Time for a market update brought to you by Birch Gold. Remember, I believe in diversification. You should own some precious metals. Either own the physical gold, which you can buy from Birch Gold. Go to HughGold.com or simply text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. Or roll over a portion of your IRA or 401k. If you've got $10,000, put $1,000 or $2,000, never more than 25%. 10% is a good minimum. Into precious metals, either in your safety deposit box where you can get it, or in your IRA or retirement account. Diversify, diversify, diversify. First rule of investing. Why gold? Because if hyperinflation comes, and admittedly, it's not here now. Not here now. But if and when it comes, and because I believe it's a when, given how much money we've got floating around this system, you're going to want to have bought gold. Gold this morning is at $1,845 an ounce. That's down $5 an ounce from yesterday. It's been as high as over 2,000 this year, as low as 1,400. But I believe we are in an era where it's going to go up, up, up. I noticed today that the Fed is likely to keep interest rates near zero as the economy stumbles, according to the Wall Street Journal. I also know in the notice in the Wall Street Journal, renewed demand for Treasury quells fears of rising rates for now. And indeed, the Treasury 10-year is at 1.04. Low, but not as low as it was during the panic of last March. These are both signals that inflation is not upon us. Well, you don't wait for inflation to prepare for inflation. You get it now, all right? You go and get your gold now from Birch Gold. At least get the information and get smart about it. It's a no obligation. Text my name, Hugh, to 474747. They'll send you the free information kit. Or go to Birch Gold or go to HughGold.com and you'll see the Birch Gold. You can give me your info and they'll send you the get smart. Okay, what's going to happen today? Last night after the bell, Microsoft reported a 17% revenue growth. This is astonishing. 17%. The earnings were supposed to be $1.64 a share of Microsoft. They came in at $2.03 a share, blowing it out. They were supposed to have as revenue $40 billion, $40.18 billion. They achieved $43.08 billion, blowing it out. Blowout earnings from Microsoft suggest, like the Netflix, that all of tech continues to dominate. And so I expect the market today to just blow up for tech stocks. But you can never tell from early in the morning what's going to happen later in the day. So don't trust me. Trust your lying eyes and check. But do go to HughGold.com. Back to the phones. What did Susan Rice mean when she talked about equity? Isaac in Michigan.
Yeah, this is Isaac. I'm a 24-year-old conservative, Hewitt type conservative.
Oh, good.
I had some thoughts on the filibuster, and I thought Senator McConnell's remarks were quite instructive.
So, well, you know, that's why you turned to the show. Where do you live, Isaac?
Exactly. Yeah, I live in Detroit. I'm actually driving into the plant right now.
Well, I'm glad you. I hope you go tell all your buddies on the line that they got to listen to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Absolutely. So my thoughts are actually a copy of Representative Flintox from California's 4th District. He proposed back in 2017 that we reform the filibuster in the following way. Instead of having a dual one-track system like we currently have, and allowing the speakers who filibuster to talk on topics that are not germane to the question at hand, reform that, get rid of the dual track, and require as a rule that if you're going to be filibustering, you can't read green eggs like in hand. In return for the proposal, my thought is that we elicit from the Democrats some type of compromise where they get rid of the Department of Education, like Ted Cruz had kind of proposed in 2016.
The filibuster reform that Congressman McClintock proposed is very intriguing to Larry Arnn, who you hear every Friday on this show. I am myself not eager to embrace that because I believe in the absolute bipartisanship requirement of a 60-vote filibuster or a supermajority of one party. So when a party achieves a supermajority, they need not be overwhelmed by the gnats of the lesser party, as happened during the New Deal. And filibusters can be broken, as happened in 1964 with the Civil Rights Act, because the Republicans joined with the Northern Democrats to crush the Southern racist Democrats. So I kind of like it, Isaac, but I'm glad you're listening. Larry Arnn is with you, and that's a good thing to have with you. Thank you, my friend. Lori in Minnesota, is this Lilac's neighbor?
Hi, how are you?
Is Lilac's alive? I don't know if he's alive.
I don't know. He writes for the Minneapolis Star and Sickle, which I never read. So
yeah, but he doesn't come out anymore. He lives in his base. You know, he hadn't called the show since I moved in the mornings.
I love Lilacs, but I'm sorry.
I don't know if he's alive. I really don't.
let's hope he is.
I hope so, but I mean, it could be anybody down there typing that stuff.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, I listen on The Patriot, and I've listened to you since your inception, and I have the greatest regard for you. However, I don't think we're dealing with classical liberals anymore.
We're not.
So, you know, Mitch McConnell can be as eloquent as he is, but it's not going to make a lick of difference. So we are being run by leftists. We got to fix this, you
think. We got to win in 2022. You're absolutely right, Lori. Come right back, America. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show, straight ahead.
Portions of the Hugh Hewitt Show are brought to you in part by Birch Gold Group.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.